Well, Maestro Yoel Levy with the Cleveland Orchestra for very good reason here this afternoon. I just made the trip, and the music of Sergei Prokofiev, his Romeo and Juliet, the Dance of the Five Couples. It is Mark Wigmore here, the Oasis on the New Classical FM, and our look at arts and culture. Welcome to Cleveland Week here on the Oasis. It's a chance to learn about our American Great Lakes neighbor to the southwest and your chance to win a wonderful stay with a hotel, tickets to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, museum and gallery passes, and more. So be listening for entry details in just a few moments. Now, I just made my first trip to Cleveland, Ohio, a five-hour drive from Toronto to Cleveland. It is the most populous city along Lake Erie, and it's the home to major cultural institutions, including the Cleveland Museum of Art, the Cleveland Museum of Natural History, the iconic Cleveland Orchestra, part of the original set of Big Five orchestras in the American Northeast, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a worldwide destination. The city's major league professional sports teams include the Cleveland Browns in the NFL, the stadium right along the shores of Lake Erie, the Cleveland Cavaliers, which was home to LeBron James for many seasons in the NBA, and the Cleveland Guardians, the number one team in the American League Central Division within Major League Baseball. And a reminder, the Blue Jays dead last in the AL East. Now, I, for one, was particularly interested in seeing a game at Progressive Field, the home of the Cleveland Guardians, as well as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But I was delighted to get a much better understanding of the city thanks to the good folks at Destination Cleveland. That includes inventive cuisine at bustling restaurants, the iconic West Side Market, exploring the popular Flats East Bank Entertainment District, where the Cuyahoga River meets up with Lake Erie, the pedestrian-friendly East 4th Street Entertainment District, which features great shopping and restaurants close to the arena and ballpark, and the arts and culture hub of the University Circle, where the museums and the botanical gardens are located. I was amazed at the city's history, design, architecture, and culture, but also the great tourism destinations and Cleveland's current reimagining of the downtown area. So, this week, a series of interviews with a selection of the cultural leaders I met on my summer trip, and your chance to win a wonderful stay in the city. To enter, simply send me a note to our email address. Here it is. oasis@classicalfm.ca. Let us know you would like to experience Cleveland in 2024, and we'll put you in the draw at the end of the week. On Monday, we focused on the Cleveland Orchestra. Today, from classical pops to rock and roll, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, housed in a glass pyramid at the foot of the city, overlooking the blue expanse of Lake Erie. The organization has been inducting the biggest names in music since the mid-1980s and opened its gallery and concert facility space to the public in the mid-1990s. So, 30 years of music lovers arriving to Cleveland to see this attraction. It's very popular and it's great. I absolutely loved it. I spent the whole day there with my uncle. I had a chance to speak with Jason Hanley, who is the Vice President of Education and Visitor Engagement at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Jason, great to have you here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Mark.
I have to imagine, if not number one, then it's got to be in the top three. I mean, this has to be one of the biggest draws for the city of Cleveland.
Yeah, absolutely. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is, you know, one of those places that people will travel from around the world to Cleveland, Ohio to come check it out. And it's an amazing museum where you can take in the entire history of rock and roll, see artifacts and handwritten lyrics and stage clothing, instruments, all these things from the most famous rock and roll musicians in the world and a lot of current artists too.
I was reminded of Paris when I was there at your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because it is this glass pyramid. I actually had no idea that that's how it had been constructed, so it was quite interesting. So tell me a little bit about how the Hall of Fame is actually set up, how people take it in and enjoy it.
Yeah, well, the connection to Paris and the Louvre is not accidental. Both the extension of the Louvre, the famous Louvre Pyramid, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Pyramid, both designed by I.M. Pei, wow, a world-famous architect. And he really believed in this idea of the pyramids and the energy and the structure of a building like that, particularly to house the sort of idea of a museum and going somewhere to see these great treasures of the achievements of the artistic side of humanity. At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we are the kind of pyramid. We're the destination for that music history that starts back in the 1920s and really gets going in the late 40s and early 1950s. And I think it's important to understand, too, the way we look at rock and roll. It's a very broad umbrella. So it covers everything from the early roots music of jazz and blues and rhythm and blues and gospel, leading up to the birth of rock and roll, the artist everyone probably knows from the 1950s, like Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis Presley, Chuck Berry and Fats Domino, and then taking it through the 60s and the Beatles and the Stones and Aretha Franklin, all the way up to heavy metal and soul and disco and funk and even hip hop. So when you come to the museum, it's a fantastic journey going back in time, looking at all those different musical styles and how they connect to each other. What they say about the world and the culture around us, I always talk about the idea that music both reflects society, meaning that you'll find music from different times in history that reflect the moment, what was happening in the world at that moment. But music, particularly rock and roll, also takes a stand often and asks for change and asks for things to be different or for us to look at the world in a way we hadn't before. You're going to see all of that here in the museum and get to look through the entire history. But we also have great films. There's a film called The Power of Rock where you can sit down and actually see. It's about a 13-minute film directed by Jonathan Demme, one of the last films he made before he passed away. And it takes you on a journey through the kind of emotional, exciting side of rock and roll. We have an exhibit called The Garage, where you can actually sit down and play an instrument yourself. So it's not just looking at things on the wall. You can actually participate and pick up a real Les Paul guitar, or sit down at a real drum set or a keyboard or a bass guitar and learn how to play or even jam with the musicians who work here. And on top of that, we often have live music, particularly throughout the summer season. We have live shows out on our plaza on a regular basis during the day and in the evening, and many of those shows are free. This place really comes alive. It's not just about the history. It's about rock and roll as something we feel and we listen to and experience. And the museum really works hard. We try to capture that every day for everyone who visits.
I have to say there were a few crown jewels for me, and I suppose that's very personal to everybody who comes into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I was heartbroken that Jerry Garcia's guitar seemed to be out on loan. That was a tough one. But I mean, I guess it is really a museum in the sense that you have artifacts and guitars and clothing and these handwritten lyrics that are coming in and out of there because they're part of private collections. Like there's always that curation going on, right?
There is. There's a lot of curation coming through. And sorry you didn't get to see Jerry's guitar.
We've had
several of them here over the years, yeah. Including Rosebud and Wolf and Top Hat and a few others. But the collection is very dynamic. There are certain things that we own that are on exhibit pretty regularly. Don't forget, any artifact like that needs to kind of come off exhibit every once in a while and rest and be checked to make sure it's still in great condition by our curators and our conservation team. Just like any museum would.
Sure.
But we also, as you pointed out, we get things on temporary loan from some artists, whether it's for a special exhibit we're doing, or maybe it's just an artist who's a current artist who wants to give us something while they're out on tour and allow us to put it in the museum. It means it's a very dynamic space. And anytime you come, yes, you're probably going to see a bunch of things from the Beatles and the Stones and Dolly Parton, but you're also going to see something different each time. Right now, we've got a bunch of special exhibits, even including our new Bon Jovi exhibit, looking at the 40-year history of Bon Jovi, our Revolutionary Women in Music, and then we have our great hip-hop exhibit that we opened last year.
So good. So good. I just loved it.
Right? That's a great... I think that's an exhibit I personally really enjoy, and you get to see everything from the early days of hip-hop in the Bronx to music that's being made right now in that exhibit.
Run DMC's sneakers. I mean, what else can you ask
for?
Oh, right?
My Adidas. and you get to literally see those shoes that were made famous in their music videos and the song from Raising Hell. And it's cool to see those. And that experience you're talking about having there, Mark, is what happens, right? You see these things and you're like, that's the shoes. Like that, you know, or that's the guitar that Metallica played on the song One. And these moments, you start to remember where you were when you heard those songs. And we mentioned handwritten lyrics. I'll just say, too, those are some of my favorites. We've got a bunch of lyrics in the museum from people like Billy Joel and Bruce Springsteen, David Bowie, And when you look at some of these and you see the meticulous way they drafted out the lyrics, but then crossed things out and replaced it, and they changed it or drew arrows to change the order of the verses. And you start to think about that songwriting craft. And man, most of the time you look at it and you go, wow, that was crossing that word out and changing it was brilliant. Like, it makes the line. And you see the actual moment of creation in those documents. And I just love getting to see those throughout the museum connected to the exhibits.
I'll bring up a couple that were interesting standouts for me, and I would have never gone to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame seeking to see them, but after seeing them, they really made an impression on me. One was Curtis Mayfield's cap, really iconic. Stevie Nicks, her black dress, which is in that 70s section. I mean, so incredible. Talk about encapsulating an era. And then Jimi Hendrix's guitars. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. So, I mean, those were kind of crown jewels for me, but I'd love to know what you think those crown jewels are of the collection.
Oh, yeah. Right now we have an instrument called the Mellotron that the Rolling Stones use because we just refreshed our Rolling Stones exhibit. The Mellotron is just such a fascinating instrument. You'd recognize it if you heard it on a song, and the Stones used it on a bunch of albums in the late 60s. The Beatles used it on Strawberry Fields Forever. The Moody Blues used that instrument. It's just a gorgeous instrument that uses tape loops to create sound. So you're actually pressing on what looked like organ or piano keys, but you're hearing a tape recorder playing the music. And the way we have it displayed, you can peek around the back and actually see the inner working mechanisms. And it's sort of this almost like, you know, steampunk instrument that is trying to be a synthesizer, but didn't quite have the technology figured out yet. I love that one. I love seeing some of the early guitars of rock and roll. You get things like Roy Orbison's first guitar, or the one Johnny Cash played on Walk the Line. These instruments, you know, created some of the most iconic songs in the beginning of rock and roll, and there they are. And then there's more intimate ones. There's a piano we have, an upright piano, that was in Jerry Lee Lewis's home that he and his entire family played, and it's beat up. It is clearly a piano that was sitting in someone's house and, you know, probably ended up kind of falling into disrepair, but he kept it his entire life.
Very memorable piece within the museum, that piano.
Right? Did you see it too?
I did.
And we have it set away from everything else, so it's just kind of on its own. When he passed away a few years ago, he made sure that was in his will to gift to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because he wanted that piano to kind of continue to live on and inspire people who came to see it. It's things like that that have those stories.
I'll ask in our last few moments here, obviously we've touched on summer as being a very busy time, but I'd love to know a little bit about your thoughts for people planning trips, what they should be thinking about.
Yeah, well, this year is going to be an exciting year. I will recommend go check rockhall.com. It's a great place to get your tickets ahead of time. We do have a kind of timed entry system, so you can plan the day and time you want to attend and get your tickets ahead. But you can also check on the website to see what else is going on that day on our events calendar. And that might mean, like I said, a free concert happening that day if you're into music. And some of those happen in the evening over the summer. So you can plan to visit the museum during the day, have dinner here or somewhere downtown and come back and check out the free concert. We often have different event weekends. So the Rolling Stones were just here recently and we had a whole weekend devoted to the Rolling Stones. So there's always exciting things to do. You know, if you're the type that wants to come to a museum and travel around without too much, I would say if you can travel during the week, it's always going to be a little bit less crowded here than on the weekends. But also coming up this year is our induction ceremony. And that'll be in Cleveland on the weekend of October 19th. And you will be able to actually get a seat in the house to come visit Cleveland. You can come see the museum, get tickets to the induction ceremony, and be in the audience. And every year I say it's one of the things that, even for as many that I've had the good fortune of going to because I work here, it is always a unique, incredible musical moment.
That is great advice and something I should think about myself. I should have been there for Rush, for crying out loud. So.
Oh, yeah. That was a famous one, too, where Alex Lifeson gave his famous blah, blah, blah speech. And if you don't know, look it up online. Yeah. It's good.
It really is. Jason, this has just been a treat. Thank you for taking us through the hall and giving us some great ideas here and sharing your passion for this music. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Mark. And hopefully some of the listeners here will become visitors. And I hope to see them in Cleveland. You'll enjoy your trip here and your time at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Jason Henley, Vice President of Education and Visitor Engagement at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And great to speak with him. Rockhall.com for tickets and info. So how about winning a Cleveland experience? A brilliant stay with a hotel, tickets to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, museum and gallery passes, and more. To enter, simply send me a note to our email address, oasis@classicalfm.ca. Let us know you would like to experience Cleveland in 2024, and we'll put you in the draw at the end of the week. And it is Cleveland Week here on the Oasis, so the Cleveland Orchestra, of course, in performance.